This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, a website, a portfolio, or an online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushii.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I'm used to seeing you, you know, with the little gray stripe that you have in your hair, but I've never seen you with pink hair before. Is that a wig that you're wearing?
Well, Chris, yeah, just trying something new out. I don't know. I don't really think it's working for me, though. I don't know if pink is really my color. I don't know. Maybe I'll go to blue.
Maybe you should change to blind.
Well, you know, I've always thought about what I might look like as blind. Hold on, let me... Okay, what do you think? How does that work?
It works pretty well, especially with that blue dress you just put on.
Oh, Chris. We weren't supposed to talk about that. This is... Whew, oh, goodness. Let's. Hey, you know what? Maybe we should just get to the show topic. I think this might be a little bit much for the people at home.
I think it might be. They might be thinking we're doing a Bosom Buddies bit or something.
Oh, but no, goodness. We're not. No. Or that we've, you know, started that whole new After Dark FM.
Oh, that's true. That's been talked about for a long time. Yeah. But no, there actually is a character who appeared on DS9 with pink hair and blonde hair and blue dresses, and that is Lwaxana Troi. And today we're going to do something a little bit different and talk about a crossover character. And of course, we've talked about Miles and we've talked about Worf, who became full-on cast members, and we've even talked about Thomas Riker a little bit before, and we've talked about Q. So here's Lwaxana coming over from TNG, and our feelings about Q being on DS9 as well as Vosh are pretty well known, that we felt it was just a gimmick to try to get viewers to come in and watch the show during its first season, making those connections to TNG. So when Lwaxana showed up on the station in The Forsaken in season one, your initial reaction was, here we go again, they're going to bring over another character. But unlike Q, I think Lwaxana actually worked fairly well on DS9, and the writers were able to do something with her.
Chris, I remember the first time I saw the episode, and I did have those feelings of, you know, oh, we're trying to do, you know, a Next Generation style thing so people will come and watch. And what was interesting is that instead of kind of falling into that trope of just trying to make that character fit in the same way it did on The Next Generation, they were able to use her in a way that I felt like really opened up some of our Deep Space Nine characters. And that's what made it work. Because, I mean, honestly, you know, the episode that she's in, The Forsaken, even Fascination, both of those could most likely just be Next Generation episodes. And yet the way that they use her in conjunction with the other characters on Deep Space Nine that we see regularly, I think elevated the episode from it just being something you thought, oh, I've seen this before. And so I liked that part. And I think that's really what gave, her as a character on Deep Space Nine, interacting with the other characters, more of a grounding and more viability than just, okay, let's bring Q, let's bring Vosh, you know, these kind of characters.
Right.
And so this worked a lot better.
Yeah, the Forsaken, I mean, definitely you could see on the Enterprise-D, something happens, the turbo lift is stuck. I mean, we've seen that before, in fact, and Loxana's stuck in there with Odo, and she's making him uncomfortable the way she makes Picard uncomfortable. But instead, they used it as an opportunity for her to open up and to finally break down that comic relief that she so often was, and the arrogance that, or I guess, is arrogance the right word? I mean, she's very full of herself. I mean, come on. She is the daughter of the fifth house of Beta Zed, the holder of the sacred chalice of Rix and heir to the holy rings of Beta Zed.
Wow. I don't even know what's in that chalice, but, you know, I think that's a good word. You know, she is very stuck up and proud of who she is. Yeah. And in some ways, I think, you know, she does have this idea or she has this air of that nobody should be able to resist her, you know,
right.
And especially sexually, nobody would want to resist her. And I think that's something that does get broken down. And so it was great, especially in The Forsaken. And I think you see that in The Muse, that there is a part of her that kind of gets stripped away in some ways.
Right.
And it actually does make her a more interesting character than just that, as you said, you know, that kind of comic relief, which there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, it's one of the things that we love about, you know, say on Deep Space Nine, somebody like Rom, you know, being some great comic relief or something like that.
Right.
But at the same time, any character on Deep Space Nine that did more comedy than drama always had another side to them that we saw. And
right. Yeah.
It was great to see Deep Space Nine do that with Loxana, because for all the time she was used on The Next Generation, honestly, it got a little tiresome as a character. She's not my favorite. But some of these episodes, I really enjoyed watching her kind of have to struggle and show a whole new side of herself.
Well, it helps when you go back and you watch her on TNG, because then you can watch those episodes with, the way I feel about it is that a lot of the way she portrays herself to Picard and to others on TNG, it's a front. You know, it's sort of a defense mechanism that she has, and she's putting up this front to protect herself from having to face these insecurities that she has inside. And because of Odo, she's able to let those out. And then we get to see that as well. And so I think that it fleshes out the character. And then retroactively, now when you go back and you watch TNG, you can see her character in a somewhat different light if you want to, because of that. But the other thing she did here too, besides that helping her character, what she really did in The Forsaken is she opened up Odo's character. Because prior to this, Odo basically only confided in his nemesis, Quark, and he was very closed off to everyone else, and he was very rigid, and, you know, we had this view of him. René Auberjonois tells a story about his father seeing a picture of Odo for the first time, and his father doesn't know anything about Star Trek, and he asked him, "Why are you playing a fascist?" Because that's the image that the photo gave. And so that's the very, very rigid Odo. That's the impression that we had early in the first season. And the way that he opens up to Loxana in the turbo lift, we start to see a vulnerability in Odo. We start to see him as a more nuanced, a more multifaceted character. And he was clearly afraid to open up that way to his crewmates on the station. And so it took someone like Loxana to come in and do it. And she's sort of an unlikely person, because I wouldn't have expected her to be that person. But then by giving her those insecurities of her own, and they're able to play off of each other, she really opened up Odo's character to the audience.
Well, and you know what I thought was great about it too, is that they create the situation in the episode that Odo doesn't really have a choice, And so it does mm-hmm. help him break that down, that barrier that he has. You know, I think, you know, this is when you watch Odo in the first few seasons, I think in some ways he's kind of ashamed of being a shapeshifter. He doesn't like to show people he's different because it has people look at him differently. And, you know, her acceptance of who he is really beautiful. We all want to be accepted for who we are and not who people want us to be. And the fact that she does that for Odo in that moment, I think really does something for him. And it creates a good character path for Odo to be on. Because his whole identity is this dual identity. Is he spends his whole time as a solid, but he's not. And, you know, when you get later on into the series, you really see that happen too. You know, we talked about Sacrifice of Angels a few months back now. And Odo's struggle there of, you know, dealing with the female shapeshifter and really coming into an understanding of who he is as a shapeshifter, you know, and a changeling, getting to experience the link for the first time and what it means to be a changeling, and you know, and his progression there, and having somebody finally accept him for who he is there, it was pretty cool. In fact, you know, I mean, it'll take Kira a really long time to understand this. You know, there's that great scene where she asks Odo to kind of show her who he is, you know, really, and he does that shimmery thing, you know, all around her, and mm-hmm. which is odd anyway. but, you know, it takes her a very long time to kind of realize this idea that Odo really isn't like her. So Luxana already knows this here in this scene, and that's just kind of a great thing to have happen. And her interaction with Odo really, I think, keeps this episode from just being like a throwaway. It does a wonder for the character of Odo and growing him. And I think that that's good writing, you know, because I'm pretty sure this, you know, the first season they're struggling with trying to have their own identity. And even though this kind of feels like a Next Generation episode in a lot of ways, what it does for Odo makes it a Deep Space Nine episode big time.
Right. Yeah. And Majel even said about this episode that it was extremely well written. And it brings out all sorts of new facets in the Luxana's character, which as an actress, I love, of course. And yeah, I totally agree with her there. And actually, the scenes in the elevator too, when I watch Majel acting there, I feel like in The Forsaken, in those scenes in the elevator, feel like some of the most natural moments for mm-hmm. her in Star Trek, where I don't really feel like she's acting so much at that point. Like she owns this character and she's just being herself when she's talking to Odo.
Yeah, and that was something that was really different is, you know, she always feels like over the top and boisterous as Luxana, uh-huh. and it was nice to see that there was a whole other side that was quieter, that, you know, she didn't, like you were saying earlier, she doesn't have to put on that act. And I really think that, like you were talking about, it does wonders, because the next time you see her and the next time you see her, you know, in a lot of ways, that's really not the real her. You know, it's just kind right. of that act that she has to put yeah. on. And I think it is cool because you'll get that really big time, I think, in The Muse, where she's...
And you said she gets this about Odo in a way that takes Kira a long time to understand. And I think that's because she herself is pretending to be someone else most of the time. She even tells Odo that even we non-shapeshifters have to change who we are once in a while. Well, and she finally takes off her wig.
Right, exactly. Well, and two, I mean, just think about this. She kind of has to pretend, I think, most of the time that she doesn't know exactly what a person's thinking, since she's a Beta Zed, mm-hmm. full Beta Zed, so she automatically knows what people around her are feeling and thinking without even really trying, you know, and to kind of have to pretend that that's not the case is got to be tiring, you know? Especially when you would grow up in a society where you can just read each other's thoughts and minds. It's such a different type of communication, you know? It must be tiring to have to talk and, you know, express your feelings when you're just used to being able to be like, you know what I'm feeling because we're just communicating with our brains right now.
Right. So we talked about how she has changed a lot. We're seeing another side of her here. Now, another thing that you told me that you noticed, which I thought was quite interesting, was in terms of Majel in Star Trek, that you see a lot of parallels between the character of Lwaxana Troi and her character of Christine Chapel from the original series.
Well, and I was reading through just the different episodes and you know, Memory Alpha, and just kind of reading through some of the stuff, and I was thinking to myself, you know, she plays number one, obviously, the original number one.
In the cage.
In the cage. And if we had spent more time with her, she would have been somebody who is kind of in love with Pike.
Right.
And that never obviously doesn't happen. But then the next time she comes on, she's Christine Chapel. And she's somebody who is in love with Spock, who is emotionally unavailable and is not going to return her feelings. You know, I think most well seen in A Monk Time, where he throws the soup on the wall that she's brought him, which I always think is really funny. So, you know, getting to Deep Space Nine and her playing Lwaxana, she is an emotional character who kind of falls for somebody who's kind of emotionally unavailable again. And I think that that's very interesting to have her be playing this character kind of over and over again. And kind of the same way, I guess, Harrison Ford plays the same character over and over again. Just one has a fedora and the other one has a blaster. And so that's a kind of an interesting thing. I'm not sure if they ever consciously thought about that while writing the episodes for her and the character and everything, or if that was something they had in mind. You know, I mean, she also plays the computer voice. I don't really see that as looking for unavailable men a lot on the show.
But yeah, she does seem to go for unavailable or unattainable men, emotionally unattainable men, in any incarnation of the character. And Odo is a lot like Spock in many respects when it comes to this particular topic of not being emotionally available. So it's an interesting parallel there. Well, let's move to, you talked about Fascination could very much have been a TNG episode, and I agree on that. Although it's an episode that, on the one hand, I don't like, because I've told you the story before, I'm sure, somewhere on one of these shows, about our local television station in Tuscaloosa when DS9 was in first run, and I guess it was intern month at the station. I don't know what was going on, but they kept playing Fascination over and over and over. So we actually missed episodes because they kept playing Fascination over and over. It's time for the next week. So they play Fascination, and then the next time when they're going to do a rerun, well, it's Fascination again. And then there was a time where they usually rerun the previous week's show. That was Fascination again. Then the new show is supposed to come out the following week. We all get around the TV. We're ready. We turn it on. Deep Space Nine starts, and it's Fascination. It's Jake with that necklace hanging up. And it's like, could you please show us some other episode besides this one? Please, please, please. But you know, watching it today, this morning, actually, because of what's going on with all the different characters on the station, it's kind of a captivating episode. You know, I found myself kind of, I was sort of skimming through episodes to watch Lwaxana, and yet I couldn't pull myself away from Baral chasing Jadzia or Jake chasing Kira. And then the fact that Miles and Keiko, even though Keiko spent all this time on this transport with Lwaxana, perfectly fine. Of course, Odo wasn't there yet. And so the thing about this Xanthi fever is apparently it only kicks in when Lwaxana is having feelings towards someone else around her. And that happened after she got on the station with Odo. But, you know, Keiko and Miles, they're having their usual little married couple spats while everyone else is falling in love with one another around the station.
Yeah.
But Lwaxana is just the catalyst for what's going on in the story. She's not actually the center of the story, as she would have been on a TNG episode.
Right, which was I think was good. And I think my favorite part about this episode is the most awkward makeout scene ever with Bashir and yes. Kira, and the way that they're just like, it's not natural at all. And yet I guess it's Star Trek, so we can't be too sexy. It needs to be funny makeout session. I mean, it looks like a bad makeout session from a 30s movie or something.
I think it was intentionally done in a way that it was kind of over the top and supposed to be funny. But even then, it felt like they didn't want to kiss each other.
Which is really funny because at this point, those two are in the midst of, you know, I think having that attraction in off screen. Yeah. And so,
right.
Yeah, it was very, very funny. But you know what? I think the best thing about this again is what it does for Odo. And we realize that Odo is in love with Kira and has been for a long time. And, you know, Luxana telling him that, you know, if you ever get tired of waiting, I'd be there for you. And so, you know, and that's something about Luxana's character I think is really interesting is for all of her understanding of emotions and emotional intelligence that she has, she does not seem to be very emotionally intelligent about herself whatsoever. And no. This idea that somehow she's going to find this perfect man and it's going to make her happy. Like she has this, and I guess maybe the writers are trying to hit this point. Nobody is going to do this for you. You know, you will just keep searching and it'll never happen and everybody will let you down. And I think that's something that's really is kind of interesting about this character. She is the personification of most people who are thinking that they're going to be made complete like Jerry Maguire by somebody. And it just, that's not reality, you know, and with her and she just, it's like, you know, if somebody really doesn't want you, you know, have more self-respect for yourself than to kind of pine for them.
Yeah. Well, I think it makes her a very real character though, because what's happening with her, of course, is that she had been married
right.
for a long time. Yes. And she's widowed, and also she lost a child. And so I feel like after the death of Deanna's father and the fact that she lost her child, Kestra, as well, I feel like at that point, you know, she finds herself as an older woman. She's far along in her life, and she feels the absence of these people in her life. And of course, Deanna's off doing her thing as well. And so, like you're saying, she feels like she's going to find someone who's going to make her whole again. But it's really, really hard to find that at that point in your life, I think. And so she is kind of going aimlessly, and she's putting up that front that we talk about, playing those characters that
right.
she plays to mask that. But inside, you know, it's really tearing her up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's a really interesting thing to see. And, you know, that does happen to a lot of people at that age who lose a spouse after a very long time. And that loss leaves them feeling vulnerable. And, you know, you spend 20, 30 more years with somebody, you'd lose the ability to kind of not be with somebody. And so that's a good point. I like that. I hadn't thought about that, but I should have. And so I think, playing both sides of that is really good.
Yeah. Well, then her third appearance is the Muse. And this is a case where I feel like the writers rescued the concept. Now, the writers are not happy with the episode. They even feel like they wish they had never done the episode. Although I don't know that it's because of the Luxana storyline as much as it is about Jake and the creativity vampire. But the story was actually pitched by Majel herself, and it's exactly what would have happened if it had been done on The Next Generation, which was, she said to the writers, Luxana is pregnant, and she's going to come on the station and try to convince Odo that the baby is his. And that's what would have happened on TNG. She would have come on and had fun with Picard, trying to make Picard think that somehow the baby was his, even though it wasn't. Luckily, the writers moved away from that idea. And they say it actually took them 6 days to break this story, and it normally takes two. This story took the longest of any story in the entire series to settle the script. But thankfully, they didn't go with the, hey, Odo, it's your baby storyline.
I think we would all have been wondering how in the world would that be possible the whole time, and it would kind of just pull you out of the episode. That I think this was one of those things that was really interesting, is it had a lot to say in the fact that, you know, she's gotten married to this guy, and she is now upset with kind of the difference in the way that they lead their lives.
This Tavanian idea of men and women and children is completely at odds with Lwaxana's normal, very open and
right
liberal views of things.
Right? I mean, you know, Beta Zeds have naked weddings, so very exactly. open, obviously. Yeah. What I think is really interesting is, like, there is this idea, and again, I think this is really important. You have a lot of people who will kind of rush in and get married to somebody, and they don't really know the person. And,
right.
You know, this is exactly what happens to her. She doesn't really know this person. The culture she's getting married into, you know, who this person is inside. And that's a really big deal. You know, you can't just think love is going to conquer all. I mean, you know, you have to have the same values. It's one of the most important things. And the fact that they don't have the same values, it's funny and interesting to see Lwaxana have to play this out. But it also, it does something about kind of stripping her character down, and kind of taking away that veneer that she has. And I like this episode because of that part. I thought it was really interesting. And then, of course, the fact that Odo has created this relationship with her, that really allows him to actually feel the sympathy for her and do what he can to help her and have no problems with it in the end, I thought was really, really cool. It's a great character growth episode for Odo, even though the A story of this really sucks.
Yeah, literally. Oh, it sucks creatively.
It
right?
does. It does.
But yeah, the fact that Lwaxana would go to Odo for help and for protection, I think, speaks a lot to the relationship that they had built in the first two episodes that she was in, and how she sees him. The fact that she seems to genuinely be in love with Odo, I think. At first, I think it was because he was unattainable. But I think that as they helped each other see who they really were and address some of the insecurities that they had, she's really come to be very fond of him as a person. And also for Odo, this episode is really great because just the idea, if you think back to the beginning of The Forsaken, and how uncomfortable Odo was around Lwaxana, and he was very much like Picard early on, right? If Lwaxana is around, he's trying to figure out how to escape.
Yeah.
But at this point, he's willing to actually marry her to help her get out of this situation with Jaal and to protect her baby. And then when she says, look, I don't think you understand, you have to convince Jaal that you want to marry me. You know, if anyone has any doubts, well, they can challenge the marriage. And you're thinking, okay, well, we know Odo doesn't want to actually marry her. And even though they have formed a sort of friendship, you still don't feel, it's much more Lwaxana towards Odo than it is mm-hmm. Odo towards Lwaxana.
Right. I think that one of the things that is when he gets challenged in that speech, and he starts to right. talk about, you know, how Lwaxana's acceptance of him really has changed him. And it has. I think you can tell the Odo of the fourth season is much more comfortable in his skin, air quotes, than he was in the first season when we meet him. And he continues to become more comfortable. And I think in some ways that really plays out. You remember Children of Time, Chris, where the mm-hmm. older Odo tells Kira finally who he's been in love with her for the longest time, right. And everything. You know, I think that is actually really something that's birthed in his kind of relationship with Luxana and becoming more comfortable with who he is and speaking up for himself. You know, Odo has spent mm-hmm. most of his life just serving other people and regimes as they change as best he can in service of justice and kind of right and wrong. And yet, you know, I think what he learns from Luxana is that it's okay to start saying that you want something or there's something that you like or you don't like or you desire, or you don't desire. And obviously that really plays out with his relationship then with Kira later on.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because, when he's challenged and you're thinking, like, what is he going to do? And then he gives that speech that you just mentioned. And it's really heartfelt. And I think everyone else, like, everyone who's in the room is watching the ceremony take place and they're all kind of smirking and like, what? Really? What's going on here?
Right.
But then when he makes that speech, you can tell they're all like, wow, he really means this.
Yeah.
And he says, before I met her, my world was a much smaller place. And the truth is, I was ashamed of what I was. And Luxana saw how different I was and she didn't recoil. And the day I met her is the day I stopped being alone. And that, I think, sums up all of Luxana's purpose on Deep Space Nine in these three episodes. Ultimately, her purpose was to round out Odo. And Odo sums it up so well in that speech. And you know he still doesn't actually want to marry her, but he is fond of her, and what he says was truly heartfelt.
Yeah, and I think it really, you know, when you think of the three episodes that she was on, and they are not three of my favorite episodes, but I really love what they do character-wise for Odo and even Luxana and just kind of creating a different bent for us to see her as, you know, just a different lens to see her through. And, you know, that's one of the things that we have talked about before and I think speaks well just for the writers of Deep Space Nine and how they were able to take something from, like, the Next Generation and just add to it and give it a little bit more depth than it had before, and give it a new spin in the same way that they do, I think we would both agree, with Worf. You know, they are able to do in three episodes with Luxana, just give her a depth that you didn't know she had. And so, I'll never be upset, you know, if I come across these in a rewatch because of the things that they're able to do for those two characters makes it totally worth it.
Right. And on top of that, I mean, you get Jadzia in Fascination, and that's certainly worth...
Well, that's true. That is
sitting through for your rewatch.
So. I would sit through that for a long time.
All right. Well, any final thoughts besides? I mean, you pretty much just summed everything up right there, I think. And I guess my final thought on it is that this was a case where they borrowed a character from TNG who was, for the most part, comic relief on TNG. And, you know, she had some serious moments on the series, but brought her over and it turned out to not be a gimmick just to get viewers and added something to Deep Space Nine that the characters that were currently on the station couldn't necessarily add to the show. And it worked well. And it actually makes me like the character of Luxana more than I did before these three episodes.
I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head, Chris, with that. I definitely like her character much more because of what she was able to experience on Deep Space Nine as a character. So very well done there for the writers to make that happen, because beforehand, definitely not one of my favorite characters. But I have much better appreciation for her now because of her time on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, well, this was an interesting conversation today, Matthew, but you know, it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things that you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
Looking for Parmok in all the wrong places.
Well, and you also get the feeling here that she's only, Worf really is only being rejected because she's not interested. It has nothing to do with whether or not Worf is Klingon enough or any of that. She's just not interested. She's interested in Quark.
Earl Grey.
The holodeck.
Alexander Rozhenko was conceived on the holodeck.
That's exactly right. In Worf's calisthenics program with Skeletor watching, because he was just frozen there and he couldn't look away.
The ready room.
The man trap.
Well, it wasn't what Roddenberry wanted to do with it. It was what the writer George Clayton Johnson wanted to do with it. But it was basically making the character more sympathetic.
To the journey!
The doctor.
But I love that moment when Chakotay, was projecting himself into the room. And, he totally, kneels down and gets super serious and calm like Chakotay does. He's like, what you've shown us is it's not what you're made of, but what you do or how you feel, you know, you just try to get even in season two, they start to realize the doctor is not just a hologram. He is becoming something more. Commentary, Trek stars.
Caprica.
Prequels are sort of a constant trap that people end up going to. You know, this thing was successful and it ended. Well, let's go before it ended and tell a different story.
Warp 5.
Klingons on Enterprise.
Having the Klingons at the very beginning of the series running through that field, do you think that was born out of the discomfort that the studio had in the idea of the prequel series to begin with?
Trek News and Views.
The Naked Time.
Gold shirts are easily ripped and disposable.
Yeah.
Blue shirts self-replicate so that they, show no damage. And red shirts whisk away sweat.
Yeah. They're highly absorbent.
There you go.
So that you can't tell that your security guards are nervous.
Literary Treks.
David R. George III, Revelation and Dust.
And it feels like an evolution for Starfleet as well in the way that they built a starbase.
Well, I'm glad that came across because that was sort of one of the things that I was going for. You wanted to be an evolution in Starfleet's construction of starbases. Mm-hmm. It should be something brand new. And because it's an important station, because it's in an important location, it really needed to be, I thought, a grand station.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and there are some days where we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You can stream from the website, or you can download files from the website. So go check all of those out, and you can get links to everything on the website at trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. And now, Matthew, let's tell everyone where to contact us if they would like to share their thoughts on Lwaxana Troi, on Majel Barrett Roddenberry, or anything else about Deep Space Nine. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Just choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to both Matthew and me by email. There's also a tab on the website that lets you send us a voicemail if you'd like to. If you click that, you can use your webcam's microphone to record the message and upload it to us as an MP3 file. You can also go to our forums at trek.fm/forums. There is a section there for the Orb, one for DS9, and you'll find a thread for this episode of the Orb as well, if you'd like to share your thoughts and talk to other listeners. And then in social media, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and we're tweeting away all the time about Star Trek under username trekfm over there on Twitter. So check us out there. And then Matthew, when you're not, trying to figure out a way to escape older women who are running around your office trying to hook up with you, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, when that's not happening, which is never, You can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02, just tweeting about all sorts of different things. So you can give me an @reply, let me know you're following me, we'll have a good conversation about Star Trek, movies, all sorts of great things like that. You can also find me, Chris, on Literary Treks, talking books and comics in the Star Trek universe with you. You know, been talking Deep Space Nine over there a little bit with some of our comic reviews that we've done. We are also been slowly working our way through the Deep Space Nine relaunch series. So if you enjoy our talk here or just enjoy the 24th century and want to find it somewhere now, well, books are the only place to do that. So join us over there on Literary Treks. Chris, now, when you're not trying to keep away from cougar women yourself, you know, where can we find you?
Yeah, that hasn't really been a problem for me. However, Vedic Barayal will just not get off my back. He's following me everywhere. He's basically hanging off my shoulder. It's really frustrating.
Cougar men, then. I didn't know.
Oh, now you'll find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my own personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then, Matthew, besides doing Literary Treks with you, you'll find me every week on The Ready Room, sometimes with Matthew, but also with hosts from all over the network, as we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series and Star Trek news with a good mix of humor and serious discussion. And then also you'll find me on Warp 5 with Kate Walsh, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise, very much in the same way we talk about Deep Space Nine here on The Orb. So check those shows out as well. And I also have my interview show, Matter Stream. I actually have a few new episodes of that coming up, so you can check that out as well. Also, Matthew, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsor for this week's show. Your support of our sponsor is very important for making it possible for us to bring The Orb to you every week. And our sponsor this week is Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create your own blog, website, or portfolio. Squarespace also makes it extremely easy to sell items online with their integrated commerce feature. Squarespace Commerce is available in the US, UK, Canada, Australia, Belgium, France, Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands, and Spain, and it allows you to sell both digital and physical products. 30-second merchant sign-up with Stripe gives you instant approval and does not require any paperwork. You can even begin receiving money for purchases via direct deposit in moments, and full tax and shipping rules by region also help you run your store. Plus, the order management interface lets you easily track outstanding orders, resend customer update emails, and print packing slips from a single interface. You can even move your existing Shopify or Big Cartel inventory over to Squarespace with just a few clicks. We really love Squarespace here at Trek FM, and that's because Trek FM itself is built on Squarespace. So find out for yourself how you can create your own store, website, blog, or portfolio today by trying Squarespace free for 14 days with no credit card required. Plans start at just $8 per month, and commerce is $24. Plus, as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts by using offer code TREK10. So just go to squarespace.com and try it for free. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of Trek FM. Also, there is one more way that you can support us, and that's by going to trek.fm/donate. We have 8 original alien illustrations there by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. And we have those available as badges and art prints, and you can mix and match, choose which ones you want. We have different contribution levels that you can make, so choose what's right for you. And your donations help us pay for the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring The Orb to you every week. So we really appreciate your support on that as well.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.